Everybody's filing MSKs now. Come on, baby, call on motion. You know we can't oppose it if you give us a chance now.
This is hot.
Come on, baby, call on motion. Weston Rudder Guys can help you and me. It's easy at excluding every list of fleas. So come on, call on motion for me. You gotta check your sights now.
No one does that. Nobody.
Scroll up, scroll down. Yeah, I think this law is sound. Now that we have finished, let's file and surf now. Good thing you called on motion. Goes up on a few because the record preserved now. Good thing you called on motion. Prior or fact determines notice and control. Now the defense counsel will look like a fool. So come on and call on motion for me. You gotta check your sights now. Come on, baby. Show up.
All right. Welcome to another episode of the Justice Team podcast. That was Law in Motion, sung by yours truly, Brandon Simon, to the theme of Locomotion by Kylie Minogue.
Wow.
Pretty good, right?
Super good, dude.
One take.
No way.
They call me One Take Simon.
Wow.
Is that what your wife says?
No.
Oh, she never says that.
So today's topic is Law in Motion, more specifically motions in limine. And before we start, we have our cocktail today. Usually we have somebody make them and bring them in and tell them what they're about. But I actually made these because I've been wanting to have one of these for a while. It's called the Stark. It's basically
I feel smarter.
It's just like a whiskey sour. It's bourbon, chartreuse, which it's I don't even know what it's some sort of liqueur. And then honey, and then you float a little bitters on top. And it's supposed to be, we drank some already, but it's supposed to be a little red on top and yellow on the bottom. I think it's like an homage to Tony Stark.
It's very good.
Iron Man. So interesting. We like comic books here, so we figured we'd keep the comic book theme. So today's topic, like I said, is Law in Motion, motions in limine, and we have a good mix of attorneys here. We have trial lawyer, we have a couple case managers, and we have a couple Law in Motion nerds in Travis and myself. So we'll start with Jenny. You can give us a little introduction, tell us what your role is at the firm, and then we'll go around the circle here.
Hi, I'm Jenny, and I'm one of the case managers at the firm. I handle the OC team and get plenty of opportunities to do Law in Motion when I can't, you know, that means like if Travis hasn't already destroyed the motion for me or he's too busy, then maybe I might dabble a little bit. But primarily we allow the Law in Motion department to handle that, which is Travis.
Yep, and I'm Travis, and I destroy motions.
Did you get those license plates?
No. I destroy motions. No? I think that'll fit. And then Evan, one of our other case managers.
Yeah, yeah. I'm handling Team LA with Grayson. And, you know, I think we have, like Jenny, plenty of opportunities to have to file these bad boys.
And then our resident hybrid, he's a manager slash trial attorney slash model, Grayson M. Goody.
It's true. I'm like a four wood that you hit out of the rough, but you can also hit it out of the fairway and putt with it.
That's pretty good.
Right? Yeah. So I am heading up the team with Evan, and I've done some writing, and I've done like a bunch of trials too. So I kind of do, I'm like a jack of all trades, master of none.
Yeah.
Where these guys are a master of their trades, I'm just kind of like floating along and doing the things that they don't have time to do. So it's fun to do everything, I guess.
And then I'm basically Travis, kind of the same boat as Travis. I do my own case managing, and then I also do a lot of Law in Motion. So we're kind of the nerds on the panel, talk about all the fun case sites and what district the appellate court was held and all that, you know, nonsense. So we got some case managers, we got Law in Motion, we got trial attorneys, so we'll have a good mix of different perspectives of motions and how to identify motions in limine. So let's jump into it. The first thing I kind of wanted to start with it was one of the questions I get a lot when we're on the listserv. It's, you know, when do I file motions in limine? And Travis, you can probably speak to this, and how you, how in our, and even the case managers too, how we kind of identify in our firm and basically give ourselves reminders of when we need to be filing motions in limine. How do you find that out?
Right. So it depends on the county that you're in, obviously. You look at the local rules for that. And then more specifically, you look at the judge's chamber rules. And oftentimes that'll be spelled out right there in the chamber rules. So if that's the case, just calendar that. If not, yeah, local rules, calendar those. And, you know, you're going to always want to be thinking about motions in limine, obviously, throughout the course of litigation. I'm sure we'll get to that topic. You know, what one key is, don't wait until the last minute to figure out what you want to file.
Right.
Right. So
huge.
Yeah. So, one of the things you don't ever want to screw up is missing, cause it's not like a regular notice motion, right? Where you have, you know, 25 days. I don't know how much it is before the motion. You have to file your papers. Motions eliminated. You have a lot shorter time frame. But there are a lot of funky jurisdictions out there where some venues, they don't want you filing motions in limine until the day of trial. Some venues, you have to file them 15 court days. There's, you know, there's funky little venues up in North California. I think Kings County is one of them. It's like 15 court days. And you don't want to be the person blowing an evidentiary motion because you didn't do a timing thing, right?
Right.
So good rule of thumb, check the local rules early and often. Make sure you're not missing anything, any of the deadlines. And there's also some other goodies in the local rules, right, Jenny?
No.
Things telling you what kinds of motions you should not be filing, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, it definitely. I mean, there is a lot of guidance that you can get from there. Like, obviously, like, don't file motions that are nonsense. Like, was it in... I'm trying to think, too, of the Pebley case when you guys were filing all those motions. Didn't they have, like, a page limit, too? Mm-hmm. They were really strict in Ventura about that.
Yeah, yeah, and very important, just that's local rules. Ventura had a 3-page limit, which
is
actually
impossible for some. Awesome.
But I love it. I love it that there's 3 pages, and I think judges love that, too. But, you know, like the local rules, you know, pretty much state rules say, like, don't file stuff that's a law. Kelly versus New West, you know, you don't file
Kelly versus insurance. Can you explain what Kelly versus New West is?
Is this a test?
Well, if you can defer to Travis,
and please start with the court of origin, please.
Pass. Can I do that? Can I pass?
Can we phone a friend and like Travis or Brandon? Why don't you just
Kelly versus
my understanding?
Are there choices? Can I narrow my choices after I get choices?
Maybe multiple choice, 50-50, pull the audience.
Whatever. I'll do anything aside from answer the question.
Travis?
Right. So I guess there's kind of two parts to it. Right. So first you have to identify specifically what you are moving to exclude or include for some MILs. But then more specifically with Kelly, you can't just regurgitate what the law is, right? You have to identify something that came out in the course of your litigation.
A specific piece of evidence.
Right. Right. You can't just say, you know, motion to exclude all evidence, not disclose an evidence, which people still do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And maybe judges will grant it. Maybe they won't. But it's not proper.
I mean, you're the trial attorney, Grayson, but I figure nine times out of ten, when that motion comes across, the judge is going to say, okay, that's all well and good, but what? Is there something specific you want me to exclude, or are you just telling me what the law is?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you have to identify it. And if it's a deposition, attach the deposition transcript so that they can see exactly what was said. And they can be like, this portion is not coming in. Don't ask that question. Don't infer it. And I've had motions denied before because we just haven't been either specific enough or haven't attached the deposition testimony. I mean, we've been specific and we've said, hey, in quotes, this is what was said, this is what we want to exclude, and haven't attached the deposition testimony, and it's just been excluded based on Kelly versus New West because that wasn't attached. So good practice pointer to make sure that's all in there.
And if you get an MIL from defense across your desk and it's one of these that's kind of in violation of Kelly v. New West, you know, you can sort of do a soft opposition to it because it's, okay, yeah, the law is the law. I'm not going to oppose that. But you can do a soft opposition and say, yes, we'll you know, be in line with this, but as long as you don't mean that you're trying to exclude this, for example, because sometimes you know what they're trying to exclude even if they're not explicitly saying it.
So, general rule of thumb, somebody asks, how do I know when to file, what not to file? I always say, right around the time you're doing expert exchanges, which is 50 days before trial, just check the local rules. Tell your paralegal, hey, just a general rule of thumb, take a look at the local rules, make sure they're in our calendar, some sort of reminder so we know. And for the most part, most people are trying cases or have cases in LA or Orange County. It's going to be the same thing every time, but every once in a while you'll have a case in San Diego if you don't practice a lot in San Diego, or Inland Empire, or Northern California. So just pay attention to the local rules in each venue. Check it early. Make sure you're not missing anything, right? Right. Any other tips?
And then as far as federal goes, I know some people do, some people don't practice federal law, but you know, those will be usually in some sort of pretrial order. You know, with federal law, it's so strict. It's insane. And so, you know, make sure you're reading those orders, and if they have a date, stick to that.
Yeah, federal law is a whole other animal. Like, you have to disclose everything within, like, you know, a month or two of the case filing. Your discovery plan and all that stuff.
Right? Oh, yeah, even expert opinions are disclosed right off the bat. And if they're not, they're out.
That's why I don't do federal cases.
Smart.
Huh, interesting.
So I wanted to talk a little bit about... not just for motions in limine, which is, this is more what this topic is, motions in limine, but just in general. And Grayson, you can speak to this too, since you're in the courtroom arguing motions a lot, especially in trial. Just general tips whenever you are writing, you know, because most attorneys are solo attorneys out there, don't have a big staff. They are writing their own motions. So Travis and maybe Jenny, Evan, if you guys have any comments of tips when you're writing your motions, things to be mindful of. Grayson, you see it play out in front of a judge. What works, what doesn't work? What do you want to avoid so a judge doesn't yell at you?
Yeah, you know, I mean, just from my perspective, the best thing to do is just always be cordial, always be professional. Try not to, like, go off on huge tangents and write 20-page motions in limine, because that'll make a judge angry right at the get-go. They'll be like, well, why are you writing these motions in limine that could be in four pages? You know, that's basically it. Just don't be a jerk in your motions, and don't call people out, because the judge will sense that animosity, and then they'll kind of punish you for it when you're arguing the motions in limine. And I've seen that happen, you know, a lot.
So, yeah, Grayson and I had a situation happen in San Francisco where that happened, where it was very... It was very combative back and forth, and we were kind of jabbing each other back and forth on our motions, and Grayson and I went up to argue the motions, and judge reamed us for being unprofessional. So it's a good life lesson to just keep it vanilla, not be too... I know, Travis, you have a thing about exclamation points, right?
Yeah, I hate exclamation points. And bold, underline,
didn't you
I hate
get sanctioned
too.
For exclamation points?
No,
recently?
I've never used one.
Ever?
Ever?
Nope. Never even in talking. I've never used one.
I just
never used
don't
one.
Speak with exclamation
points. So I think, too, one thing to think about, and just if we're talking about tips about writing them, is don't reinvent the wheel. I mean, I know there's plenty of you know, I don't want to say boilerplate, you know, per se, but certain legal issues or certain issues are always going to come up. I mean, you know, ask us.
Someone's
ask people.
Done it before.
Exactly. And then, you know, plug in your necessary facts, but, you know, don't bang your head against the desk and try to write this from scratch. I mean, work smart, for sure.
And as far as MALs, and I think this goes for other motions as well, you know, the judge doesn't usually need the kind of general basic authority for you know, them to rule on your motion. So a lot of MALs will say the court has authority under this case to grant a motion in limine. Every judge knows that they have that authority. You don't need to waste time.
Yeah, we've
that.
Had
you
I've had
right into
judges
it.
Tell me that, like, not in front of on the bench, but you know, you see them at a event. I've had judges conversations. They say, don't put that in there. They don't care. They know.
Same with MSJs. I think, you know, I don't put in, you know, under CCP 437C, you can...
There we go. There was a nerd out right there.
Big time.
I love when you talk acronyms.
So one of the things that I try to be mindful of is, Grayson hit on this, the page limit thing, is being mindful of the court's time, right? You don't want to. If you file a motion where you have, you could spend 2 days on a beautifully written motion that's 10 pages long and has this authority, and you're block citing everything, and a judge could just be like, great. I know what it's about. You wasted my time. Judges, be mindful of the judge's time. They don't have a lot of time. You go on a Tuesday and look at their calendar, and it's just like, you know, every time you go court call, you're number 20. Like every day, these judges have a lot of shit stuff that they have to read. Be mindful of the court's time.
Kind of along the same lines, is just put everything that you need in the title.
Right, or in the introduction, right.
Yeah, in the introduction, because they're going to be like, they'll read it, and they'll be like, yeah, that's prejudicial, we should not have that in there. And then they'll stop reading it. So just make sure all that stuff is up front, so they can just
And I feel like most judges, most judges already understand the law, especially in, most of the stuff you're trying to exclude is just 350, 352, irrelevant, prejudicial. So make sure it's very clear in the introduction what you're trying to get out. Make it very short and simple, right up front. Use bullet points if you want to. Mm-hmm. Just make it clear in the introduction. And most of the time, they don't even read, unless it's an expert motion or something complicated. They've already seen this type of thing before.
Travis, when you're going to be a judge, are you going to read all that little stuff? Like, if you get a 10-page motion in limine, are you just going to be like, I know this one?
No.
See?
Well, you've just disqualified yourself from ever being a judge.
This is confidential, right?
Yeah.
Just between us. It won't be broadcasted to anybody except for us.
Just the internet. No problem.
So one of the things, and this is, I kind of want to get the case managers involved a little bit. one of the questions I get a lot, you see a lot on the listserv, and I've done presentations on motions in limine. People ask you, how do you know, or people email me and they say, can you give me the basic motions in limine you always file in this type of case? And my response is, there's not really, most of the time you're going to have medical billing disputes and stuff, but there's not really the same, you shouldn't be filing the same exact motions in every case. And if you do, you're probably a defense attorney filing the same BS, no insurance, restatement of the law, blah, blah, blah. Right. So case managers, Jenny and Evan, can you give us a little bit of how you guys, as case managers, you take a case from the inception, you follow it all the way to trial. How do you guys identify motions in limine? What's the process that you so you can hand it off to the trial attorney?
I think it's one of those things that, you know, Travis mentioned earlier. It's something you really want to start thinking about from the very beginning so that you're not caught off guard at the end. So as you're doing your discovery and depositions and everything else, you know, you're constantly thinking about the potential issues you have down the road. You have to have good communication with your team. You're not going to be personally, as the case manager, you're not going to be at every single deposition. So you need to be aware of what happened at those depositions and have your people report back to you, hey, this issue came up. It's probably a good one to put on the MIL list. And then you know ahead of time what you're going to be focusing on. And then I think we have a good system here, too, before we kind of move into the motion in limine phase, where we identify those issues very clearly. You know, some of the MILs we could get started early. Others have to wait, obviously, for expert depositions to be completed. But I just think it's one of those things you have to constantly be thinking about it early and often.
Right. I mean, you nailed it. I think you have to try to be dedicated. And after every deposition, you know, the attorney who takes it, and whether, you know, you're a little larger firm and you have the luxury of a case manager, or you're handling these your own, you absolutely have to take a second. Jot down a few things that scared you during that deposition. And some of them, you know, that's a crappy fact. Oh, well, like that's just the reality. But some of those are going to be eligible for emotional eliminate. And you just need to keep a log going throughout the entire time. It's way easier than rereading all these depositions and trying to do it all over on a time crunch when maybe you're surprised by a local rule that they're due way before you're usually, you know, aware of it. So, you know, that's something we harp on a lot, is like, look, send us an email, bullet point these five things, let's talk about it. We save the email, and then when the time comes, we're ready to chat about it.
So proactive, not reactive, right?
Yeah, and that goes for everything, you know, obviously.
Yeah, so even if a lot of times at our firm, we'll get brought cases sometimes weeks before trial, and they were from a referral attorney that probably doesn't do trials or doesn't think the case is ever going to even see a courtroom. And so a good lesson that I was taught early on is always, always think of the end game. Think that there's always a possibility of trial. Think in advance. Make sure you're identifying those issues, because you might not be the one trying the case, but the case is going to get tried, right? Whether you're going to do it or someone else is going to do it. It does a disservice to the client if you're not thinking proactively and keeping an eye on things as they come up, right? You don't want to be the person you get handed a file a week before trial and you're parsing through deposition after deposition trying to find things. You get to trial and something gets sprung on you that could have been found very early on, right?
I read this article last week or 2 weeks ago about different MILs and this.
Can you send that to me?
Sure.
I'll take a copy too.
You guys are such nerds.
This person had a kind of this process they used to flag MILs during a deposition. You know, they ask a question, and then whenever the deponent would respond, if they thought that was a good thing that they needed to, you know, exclude, they would just look at the court reporter and say, MIL. And so you can, like, search through your transcript, hilarious. Which, you know, it's kind of a dick move, I guess. But
you're also tipping.
It's efficient, yeah. Right?
You're also tipping the other side off.
That totally. Yeah, that too. Yeah.
Right.
Fine.
That's funny.
Fine. Actually, Carl Douglas once he told me a story. He does that in depositions when he gets a really good fact. He says abracadabra, and then he just searches abracadabra, and he's like, "This is what I want to do my cross on." It just sets it right up.
What if the court reporter can't spell that?
Yeah. That's kind of a little overboard.
That's a tough. I mean,
it is a little overboard. MIL is a lot easier.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, but you can get MIL in some variants inside other words, so you might be.
Millions.
You could just say $1 million.
Millions. Yeah. So I wanted to play a little game. We're going to talk about, we'll do it Family Feud style. So we're going to have two teams. We'll have.
I call Travis.
Okay.
No offense.
Evan gets Travis.
Whatever.
We're going to do sports teams names. You ready,
Come
Travis?
Come on. This is so unfair. Ready? No.
This sounds fair.
No. We'll do the most common plaintiffs motions in limine. So motions in limine that we're actively filing. Jenny's already wrote down all the possible games that we could have played at this podcast.
Well, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying.
So we'll start with Travis and Evan. Do you guys have a team name? Oh, we're playing the feud. Whoa. We got the music.
Yes.
So Red Tie. Team Red Tie.
Globe Cup.
So we got six.
Team Globe Cup. That's it, man.
All right. So top six answers on the board. The most common plaintiff's motions in limine. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think we have an answer. Travis.
Pebbly.
Overbroad. It's overbroad.
Sustained.
Be more specific.
Sustained. I'm going to need you to be more specific,
there's,
counselor.
There's two pebbly ones.
Oh, you trying to remember what the...
Pebbly has to pass meds.
It's a little non-specific.
That's not. It's pretty more specific.
Overbroad.
Yeah.
I'll give it to you. So
thank you.
That's number two. I'd call it, you know, insurance rates, right? To discount past medical bills. So I'll give that to you. Number two. So Jenny and Grayson have a chance to steal. If you get the number one answer, you can pass or play.
I have no idea. Jenny, do you have any idea?
I mean.
Are you being facetious?
Yeah. Let me try. Let me think.
Jenny, can put your phone away?
No, oh, sure, yeah, I can do this. I'm going to go with pebbly, but a little bit different, more like mitigation.
Ooh, number one answer, mitigation. So,
but that's made up.
If
oh, whoops.
Grayson, since you actually tried the pebbly case, can you give us kind of what pebbly means, what the ruling was? What?
Can I phone a friend?
Oh, you were just on the trial phase. You weren't on the appellate phase, so
yeah,
you can't speak to
and
it.
And I blacked out during the trial.
Travis,
too,
can you tell
so
us
no
what
pebbly...
I'm going to let you do that.
Brandon,
right.
Please.
Okay. I'll tell you.
You know,
Jesus.
No, you know why I'm doing this? Because, like, even I'm afraid to say anything about pebbly because Brandon freaks out when people misinterpret pebbly. So.
Let me see if I can interpret it right and not freak you out.
Ochoa is the one that makes me go crazy.
Yeah. Oh, you do go crazy about Ochoa.
When people say you can't introduce medical bills.
So in Pebbly, our client had Kaiser insurance, and he did not treat through Kaiser. He instead treated with other doctors on a lien, and their big argument was he had to treat through Kaiser to mitigate his damages. The court said, no, you don't have to do that. You have a substantive due process right to treat with whoever you want. And that's kind of, in essence, the ruling, saying that they can't use insurance rates to say, you know, your past medical bills should be discounted to insurance rates. Same goes for the future.
Right. So it goes back to the classic.
Wow.
Bomb. Did you just drop a bomb?
Can I drop this mic?
Was that a blah, 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 blah bomb? Dude, that Travis got that one.
That startled me.
Seriously. So
I need another drink.
Pebbly goes back to the classic collateral source rule, right? We don't want evidence of insurance in the courtroom. You can't say that they used to be able to do this for, you know, the better, probably more than a decade. They could say client had insurance. They had a duty to mitigate their damages, to treat through insurance. So their past medical bills should be, no matter what they are, what they're billed at, they should have to be discounted to what insurance rates are. So Pebbly put an end to that. They said, no, plaintiff has a right, like Grayson said, to treat on a lien, choose their own doctors. There's going to be no evidence of insurance. Even if the plaintiff is insured, there's no more of that. Grayson Goody tried that case.
I was going to go off on kind of a little bit of a tangent.
Tangent
here.
Away.
So for your motions in limine, set yourself up for these. For Pebbly, look at the reason behind the Pebbly ruling and have your plaintiff testify as to why they decided to treat on a lien as opposed mm-hmm. to treating on their insurance. You just look at the opinion, and there's a bunch of reasons in there as to why they came to this opinion.
Brandon, you do that on your discovery too, don't you? Discovery responses. I've seen you do some
stuff like that, right? Yeah, I don't want to give away too many secrets.
Right.
There are certain discovery responses where they kind of, they want to set you up to say something to the effect of, my attorney sent me to XYZ, so.
There's a way to frame
it. I usually put a little blurb in there about how I couldn't afford to pay my copay, and I didn't trust the doctors at Kaiser, and blah, 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 blah. So basically daring them to read it in front of a court.
And my HMO is health maintenance organization, right, and it's not set up for these traumatic injuries
exactly.
that I sustained. Yeah.
So you can pass or play.
Play.
I don't even know what that
so
means.
Play. So they got the number one answer on the board. They can.
We just win. I mean, we just.
No, you didn't
whoa,
win.
Whoa. I think it's like impossible.
This is a springboard into other motions and lemonade topics. All right. Okay. So. All
right. Do you want to confer?
Go for it.
Do you want to confer?
I'm going to say attorney referred treatment.
Ooh, that has to be on there. I just feel like
number three, attorney referrals. Grayson, you're the trial attorney. What's the success? I mean, first of all, what's the motion, and what's the success rate on getting that motion granted?
Whoa, Freudian slip there.
I don't know.
You know, surprisingly, we have a pretty good success rate on getting this granted because, look, I mean, defense attorneys love to talk about attorney-referred treatment and, oh, you worked it up. It was the attorney who worked it up, didn't actually need this treatment. But you have to establish that there's no medical malpractice. Nobody's claiming that there's medical malpractice. So why is it even relevant to talk about attorney referred treatment? It's not. What's the relevance of it? So, you know, we kind of hit it at that angle, and you have to set it up through expert discovery, even through the defense expert. Do attorneys refer you patients? Yes, they do. Anything wrong with that? No, there's not. So really it's a 352 argument, and it's completely prejudicial for the defense to go up there and say that. And you know, some judges get it, some don't.
And the way I always phrase it in in my motions is, listen, if you're gonna ask, if you think that you're entitled to ask the plaintiff who referred you to where, you know, was your attorneys involved, are they the puppet masters, then the plaintiff should be able to explain why he went through his attorneys, right? And why did he go through his attorneys, Evan?
Because he was injured by the terrible defendant on purpose. No.
But, I mean, insurance company. You know, the insurance company is denying my claim, or I wasn't getting good care through my own insurance company. And then you tell the judge, look, then we're going to get into the whole collateral source rule. Right. And we don't want that in front of a jury. They're going to think my client has insurance. They're going to think the defendant has insurance.
And have a trial within a trial.
Defense attorney doesn't want any auto insurance coming in, right? So I think that's a good point, Grayson. That's a good way to phrase it. So We have three more answers on the board.
Whoa.
I'm pretty sure Jenny memorized my sheet.
I think I know. Do you want me to just keep going?
Yeah, keep going. It's just
can I give a guess?
Yes.
Because I haven't memorized them.
Okay.
But you did look.
Wait.
Leans. Exclude leans.
Ooh, I'm sorry. I actually had that as the same motion as attorney referrals.
Oh. What? So. That's not the same motion.
Well,
though.
I'm
it's
the host and you're wrong.
Different.
Judges? The judges agree with me. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Wow.
All right, we're going to move over to Team Red Tie.
No, it's Globe Cups.
Oh, Globe Cups, sorry.
So, but, you know, I watch Family Feud, of course. Oh,
Steve Harvey. Who's awesome. Your favorite host?
Steve Harvey.
He does a good
and
job.
New the guy from Tool Time.
Louis?
Oh, no, no one's favorite is Louis Anderson.
Al Borland. Wait, that's his name in Tool Time, though, right? Or what's that show? Home Improvement.
Yeah. Woo! Tool Time is the show within
Five
the show.
5 points.
Yeah. So anyway, I only have to get one to win. So I, you know, I'm gonna
Family
just,
Feud rules. Yeah, no.
I'm just gonna go ahead and say alternate causation.
Ooh,
I'm
yes.
Win stupid. That one.
That's number six. It's a very. It's. Can Feels you explain good. Alternate causation? Because this is one of my favorite motions, and they don't right. always work. But if you can, if the judge understands it, it's a huge plus.
So the idea there is that alternate causation is an affirmative defense. Right, so if the case hasn't been worked up to...
So explain what alternate causation is first. What does that mean?
Right, that a third party or some other source is liable, is responsible for the injury. That's alternate causation.
Could degeneration be an alternate cause?
Sure.
Okay.
So the MIL is to say that this is an affirmative defense that needs to be asserted and proved... proven by the defense, and they haven't done so.
What about this, Mr. Davis? I am the defendant. I don't have the burden of proof.
But you do.
Oh.
Right. So the MIL... So the MIL, specifically, you know, the way we word it is, you put down, you know, that they do, in fact, have the burden of proof, and nothing in their discovery responses, any deposition testimony... has shown that they've met that burden.
So the theory is they're not saying, look, this didn't happen. They're saying it did happen. The person was injured, but we didn't do it. It was something else that caused it.
Right. And generally, it's just one of their affirmative defenses in their answer, but they never work it up. And you know, obviously, everyone sends discovery, but the key one is 15.1 on the form interrogatories. And that asks them to, you know, state all facts, persons, documents in support of their affirmative defenses. And if they say, a lot of times, and it's amazing that they'll say this, they just say, we asserted this affirmative defense, you know, so that we don't waive it. But they don't set forth any facts. And then you meet and confer, you get no response, send supplementals, you need to send supplementals, I think that's pretty key. Just to show that you've been trying to get this information out of the defense. And so if they've never given that to you, it's trial by ambush and they haven't met their burden and various reasons why they should not be asserting alternate causation.
So
can I ask a question really quick to Travis, the guru? I've gotten this in trial. Defense attorneys will say these other possibilities, they don't go towards alternate causation. They go to undercut substantial factor and your causation argument. I mean, they may not be saying, hey, these are what caused it, but they're saying these could have caused it, and therefore you are not right on what caused it. I mean, is that a good argument? I mean, I've seen some judges buy that.
No.
Why are the judges buying it,
man of Travis?
Lame.
Seriously lame.
With a period.
I couldn't tell you, Grayson.
Yeah.
It's their burden.
Yeah.
The law is clear on that.
What I think, too.
So, technically, Team Red Tie won. There is one more.
Yeah, that's how it works.
No.
Yeah, Family Feud rules, they win. There's one
Thank
more,
you.
And
we
I want to...
play Family Feud.
Travis knows how to play Family Feud, okay?
Hey, look, Travis likes rules, and you're breaking them.
So, the last motion on my list that I want to talk about was Sabrosa.
No, period.
So, Evan, tell us what Sabrosa is.
It is secret footage of your...
Was that a direct translation, a Latin translation?
I believe it's actually Pig Latin. And it may be Nordic in origin.
Oh, my God.
So, Sabrosa is something that could possibly... sink your case, right? And so we have a process here at our firm where we try to flush it out. Evan, can you touch on it?
I mean, you know, first off, it starts early off with discovery, and it's very, 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 very important, obviously, to ask for it, you know, your initial set, you know, round one, to follow up. MO, if you didn't check the box in the form ROGS.
13.1 form interrogatory.
Right, right. The first 12. Time, you know, send more discovery, ask them special interrogatories, a whole bit, supplemental. But basically, you know, the idea is if they have it and you've asked for it and they're not providing it to you, you know, that's trial by ambush. I mean, you can't – a lot of times we know that they assert the attorney work product here, privilege, and, you know, it's confidential, blah, blah, blah. But the idea is, look – you can't hide behind the shield of the attorney work product privilege and then use it as a sword in litigation. So
nice.
Ultimately, you know, it is important to flush that out, send repeated emails, kind of like Travis is saying, you got to lay down the groundwork of your attempts to uncover this footage. And then if they don't and you think they have it, well, it is a perfect topic for a motion in limine.
Yeah, the groundwork is very important again with all of this. You know, the judges don't like you to come in there and say, oh, look at this 2 years ago. You know, they didn't answer this. So, you know, technically we should, you know, get this stricken. They do want to see that you've actually tried and tried and tried to get this information and the defense has just refused. And so there's no other option but precluding it.
So make sure you send the interrogatory 13.1 and then send supplemental interrogatories as you get closer to trial. Because if you don't, They're going to say, look, we didn't have it at the time, but you never asked us again.
And meet and confer, too, and confer. For both, yeah.
Right.
All right, so any other fun law and motion topics that you think we need to discuss?
You know, I think one thing that's interesting, I think Grayson has had this happen a few times, is this idea of oral motions in limine. And I think a lot of people don't realize that. I think some of your recent experiences, I think, would be helpful to share
LA
with the audience.
You know, I think it is, I know it's a written LA rule where you can just come into trial. You don't have to write your motions in limine. I've tried cases where defense attorneys haven't written any motions in limine and come in and kind of blindside you with 10, and they just say them to the judge, and then you argue them orally. And you're allowed to do that in LA. There may be other counties in California where you can do that. That just goes back to the point where, you know, definitely check your local rules.
Exactly.
And don't worry too much about writing the motions in limine in LA, because you can go in there and you can be like, look, you know, we had expert discovery. This expert said this and it should be precluded and the judge will entertain it.
But not every judge is going to let you go in there to 10 oral motions, right?
True. I mean, you want to probably try to limit it. You know, you write most of your motions in limine, especially if they came up earlier
in the
case.
But I think with that rule, it probably applies to, hey, something came up after we already exchanged our written motions or something came up on the fly and I want to make an oral motion right now. Because it didn't come up before, that sort of thing. You probably don't want to do all of your motions. Hey, Mr. Defense Attorney, I'm just going to tell you all my motions when we get there, right? Yeah. That's probably not good practice.
That's a little bit of trial by ambush there too.
I think just the point is, again, check the local rules, understand,
and the department rules.
Yeah, absolutely, to understand how it's going to work, so that you can possibly be prepared for dealing with oral motions, etc.
Right.
It's not best practice to go in there and just say, hey, I got 5 in my pocket.
And back to the sub rosa thing, too. You know, you were talking about doing meet and confers. Compel that information. Compel it. You know, depose these investigators.
Force their hand, yeah.
Literally force their hand and get everything. Because sometimes they'll show up for the deposition and they'll be like, you know, I got 6 minutes of video, but I followed him for 12 days. You're like, dude, where's the rest? You know, like, I know there's a bunch of stuff out there that you don't want me to see, and we have to get it all so that we can decide what's relevant. Because there could be 15 minutes of him limping around a parking lot.
All right. I think that's all we got for this session's podcast. Thank you for listening. And until next time.
Thanks,
buddy. Simon out.
There it is. 'Cause yours is really catchy.
Everybody's vibing in this game now. Come on, baby, call our motion. You know we can't oppose it if you give us a chance now. Come on, baby, call our motion. Westlaw's Flutter Guide can help you in need. It's easy and excluding and a list of fleas. So come on, come on, call our motion for me. You gotta check your sights now. Come on, baby, scroll up, scroll down. Got faith is lost sound. Now that we have finished, let's file and surf now. Good thing you call on motion. Shows up on a music to the record preserved now. Good thing you call on motion. Prior or back determines notice and control. Got a defense counsel who look like a fool. So come on, come on and call on motion for me. You gotta check your sights now. Come on, baby.